Welcome to Earthworm Slumber Party,
where we explore big ideas playfully.
My name is Opulence, and I am a living, breathing organism.
My name is Nisha, and I am an earring aficionado and an orthotic aficionado.
Wow, so excited to be here today with you, Nisha. And I want to know, what are you composting today?
That's a really good question. I think what I'm composting today is Instagram.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a big one. Yeah, this behemoth has at times taken over not just my life, but my hand. Like, have you ever found your hand just like reaching towards your phone without your conscious control?
All the time, actually.
Yeah. So I realize that happens. I use Instagram a lot for work and stuff. And yeah, I have found myself, I have taken breaks before, deleted it from my phone and all that. But recently I went on a week-long trip with my partner for our anniversary, and it was amazing. And I deleted Instagram from my phone, and it just really made me think about the relationship, not just the relationship I want to have with it. I often think of my business as my baby, and it made me think, what kind of ecosystem do I want my baby to be a part of? And how much is Instagram a part of that? Not that Instagram's terrible, but like, what relationship do I want my baby to have with Instagram? So yeah, I'm child-free, but I do see this as my baby. And yeah, so that's something I'm composting and just figuring out right now.
I love that, Nisha. I love both the reflections on your baby, but also I love that you are, you know, talking about and moving towards such a big change. I think I want to compost Instagram, but I'm a little scared because I'm like, I don't know what coping skill I would replace that with. And if I'm honest, sometimes I just black out. And then when I come to, I'm looking at the screen. So kudos to you. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. I mean, there's times I still have to just like delete it from my phone just to not have that and just to accept that this is a habit. And honestly, the app is created to hijack my dopamine. So I try not to like blame myself. And, you know, we live in a rough world. You know, we need to cope. So I completely understand how challenging that can be.
Wow, that's really powerful. And it actually ties in a little bit to what I'm composting today, which is isolation. You know, I give myself a lot of permission to access Instagram because, as some people may know, I recently moved to South Carolina, and it's a big change for me to go from like more radical or queer affirming places where I have a lot of community to go somewhere that's more conservative and where the community I have is really tied to my childhood and my family. So it's less queer affirming. I think what I've been realizing is that I've been giving myself to engage, like permission to engage in things like Instagram, but it's actually just the illusion of community. And I often don't actually feel connected. But what I do know is that I do have friends, they do exist, and they love me. And so I'm going to let go of maybe some of my habits of not reaching out, of turning to Instagram from that dopamine. And I'm trying to call in and embrace more letters, more phone calls, more visits with friends.
I really love that. And I also loved you talking about letters, which always like just warms my heart to think about. Yeah, you know, it's so interesting how relationships get created on social media. I've made some great friends on Instagram who I've met in real life eventually, some I haven't. But it is a different type. There's this like transactional, relational kind of gray area, I feel like, with Instagram. It's way more accessible, right? Just grab your phone and it's there. But yeah, but it can also lead to that isolation while you're connecting with others, which is kind of an interesting dichotomy. So I appreciate that reflection.
Yeah, it's not all good or all bad. I will also say I just learned about a term recently. Shout out to another podcast, ICYMI, in case you missed it, a podcast about the internet, where they talk about the term inshittification, which talks about how different apps like Instagram slowly degrade in quality. So just really excited to be moving through the real world more and to also let go of that idea that I'm isolated or that like when I look on there, just to understand like, yeah, Instagram, while it might give me a quick hit of dopamine and it's beautiful to see my loved ones' faces, it's not the same as having a conversation with them.
So true. So it sounds like you're de-shittifying.
You heard me. I love that.
I hear you. I see you. I love you.
I love you too, Nisha. So, Nisha, I hear that you have an update for us.
I do. I have an update from the last episode about my nose piercing. So after the episode, I realized that I probably should have talked to my mom before we recorded, but that's okay. So I talked to her after and I asked her like what had happened. Cause I think the biggest question I had was like, was this the ring I'm wearing right now really the same one he put in? Cause like, I don't see how he would do that. And she corrected me. So I was wrong with that. She said it was basically like a wire that he just put through my nose. So that he basically made a hole and put this wire that was like able to be bent through my nose. So I think that is a really important correction. I don't want to mislead people to think about this magical right. man and these white gungy like fabric also being a magical wizard who put something through my a nose ring directly through my nose. But the rest of the experience was still pretty wild. So gotta admit.
Okay, I'm glad you fact-checked yourself.
Yes.
And I'm glad that we are able to come to our listeners with a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
That's really what I'm hearing. Okay, well, I also have an update, actually.
Please tell me.
I wanted to tell everyone that since we recorded our episode on the Golden Buddha, I actually went to India. And while I was in India, my mom took me to golf links, which like, from what I could tell, golf links, that neighborhood is like Beverly Hills. Like golf links is in Delhi and it's just a wealthy area. I will say it was significantly less air pollution there. And there was this big like public park. And in the park, there was like a larger than life-size golden Buddha.
Wow.
And I took a photo of it. It's in my newsletter. And it was also really beautiful to watch my family's reaction to the Golden Buddha. So I just wanted to share with everyone that I finally got a chance to meet a Golden Buddha in real life.
That's so beautiful. Did you think about like what we shared in our episode together?
I did. And I actually shared that story with my family. And my mom had never heard that story before.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was really beautiful to talk about with my family, especially because I'm a South Asian person that is navigating trans and queer identity. And I never thought this would be true, but I'm actually openly navigating those things with my mom. So it just opened up a lot of conversation to talk about actions we've regretted in the past, identity, and who we really are. It was so beautiful.
That sounds absolutely beautiful. So thanks for sharing that update. That's pretty huge. Not just the Buddha, but just it is huge.
It's huge.
But the Buddha was huge.
The Buddha was larger than life. And actually, one of my aunties has Parkinson's and is not very mobile, but she requested to be carried down 2 flights of stairs and put into a car so she could also visit the Golden Buddha.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, we love the Golden Buddha.
Very cool. Well, for today's episode, I think opulence might have a story for us. Is that right?
It's true. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay, I love this story. It's one of my favorites. All right, so once upon a time, there was a beautiful monastery on an island in the sea. And there were these 3 monks at the monastery, and they decided to take the boat out to go fishing for, you know, to catch a meal to feed everyone there. While they were on their boat, they actually got caught in a storm and they were unfortunately shipwrecked onto a different island. And their boat was damaged beyond repair, so they weren't able to get back to their home. While they're on this island, gradually, as the days pass, they build a shelter for themselves. They continue to meditate every day. They just slowly start going about their lives, living their truth, living their philosophy, making their best, accepting what's happened. After about 3 weeks of this, the island spirit spoke to them. And the island spirit, so moved by these open-hearted, you know, dedicated, disciplined monks, came to them and said, "You all have impressed me, and so I will grant each of you a wish." So the first monk speaks up first and says, "Thank you so much, island spirit. I really miss the community that we came from. I love our beloved Sangha. Will you reunite me with my former community?" And the island spirit said, "Done." And poof, the monk was transported back to his home island. The second monk approaches and says, "Beloved island spirit, I miss my former teacher and sitting at his feet and learning from his wisdom. I want nothing more than to be reunited with my former teacher." Island spirit says, "Very good. It is done." Poof. The monk disappears. The third monk approaches and says, "I actually love it here. The only thing I want is to be reunited with my two friends. Can you bring them back?" And then poof, the two other monks reappear. Wow. I love this story because to me, it really speaks to human nature and sometimes the conflicts that occur. You know, like these two monks just wanted to go home. They were home for a second. And then this third monk, seemingly oblivious, but it makes you wonder, like, are they a narcissist manipulator? You know, like, totally. Like shows up and is like, "Actually, forget what they want. I want them here with me on this island. Bring them back." And in that way, you know, the island spirit honors their wish and undoes the first two wishes. And it's very much that energy. In one way, it's like two steps forward, three steps back, you mm-hmm. know? And it's also just makes me think about how sometimes individual desires conflict with the collective. But I also love this story because there's this like innocence in the wish of the third monk. I don't know. What does this story make you think of, Nisha?
Yeah, so much. Thanks for sharing that. It's making me really think about relationships. So, and the conflicts, but also, I don't know, like the first and second monk, they still wanted to return to some type of relationship, one with the Sangha, the second with the teacher. And then the third person was like, "Well, I want to be back in relationship with the people who I got deserted here with," you know? And it made me think the different type of relationships we all need to feel connected. So that's one thing. The other thing I kind of wondered was like, what if the third monk went first? What would he have? What would he wish for?
Oh my God, so true. And you're actually making me think about this moment I once had in a facilitation. I was in this group. We had been meeting fairly regularly and we kind of had a rhythm. I actually always went first. And then there was someone in the room who would share last. And one day our facilitator really challenged us to change our roles. Mm. And it was kind of interesting because what that facilitator was saying to my peer who always went last was, and it was interesting. They kind of made a pointed statement. They were like, they were kind of calling out the power of going last mm. and how it allowed that person to listen to all of us and position within that. So I think they were kind of loving calling in some like maybe people pleasing or like being mm-hmm. strategic, you know? And so I thought that was interesting because I hadn't thought about that before, how like, because I, as someone who's comfortable sharing, has a lot to share. Sometimes I think it can be a good use of my energy to share first, to make people comfortable, to open up the space, you know? But I hadn't really thought about just how these orders over time can impact our dynamic together. What I thought was so funny about that experience was, while I appreciated that person calling in my peer and challenging them to like shift their relationship to power and to be vulnerable enough to go first, it was funny because all of us got really dysregulated by that dynamic. Mm. And we were like, "Actually, I want to go first and you're supposed to go last." And that's our order.
Right. It's almost like thinking about being back in grade school and like, that's my seat. Like no one else is supposed to sit there when you're just assigned. Right. Yeah. I really like that example too, because yeah, the person who opens kind of sets the pace, the tone, you know, for the discussion, and the last person kind of is able to receive everything and maybe can respond in a way where they feel really full, but also, yeah, there could be that strategery, you know, there too. So I think that that's a really interesting reflection. And going back to the story you told initially, yeah, you know, thinking about how this last person, you know, basically was now on the island alone, you know, and maybe that feeling, even though the other people left, to go to, assuming that their wish would be granted, they were still there with at least one other person, one other monk there. So it really made me think about belonging and how much we need to feel belonging and how that recency of the monks being there with him. It's like, well, I was here on this like island alone and we were in survival mode. And this is kind of how I felt like I belonged, you know? So I want that back. So yeah, it can be a manipulative thing, but sometimes we manipulate in order to survive too.
That is so true. You know, I always tell myself, or like something I try and keep in mind is like, we all have harmful behaviors, not because we're evil, but because harm works. Mm-hmm. It's like something we did that allowed us to get our way. I think like it's interesting just reflecting on that thing around order, that conversation around order. What comes through is that the first person to initiate has power and so does the last person, mm-hmm. right? And they're almost like different expressions of power, but they're both really powerful,
yeah.
beginning and ending. And then to your point about them being alone on the island, you know, in talking to this story about you, normally I tell a story and I connect it to having conflicting needs. But in this moment, talking it out with you, I'm like, wow, that third monk really did want to explore and create something new.
Mm-hmm.
Those two other monks were like, we want to go back to the familiar.
Yeah.
Let us go back to our established home where maybe the structures are more stable than what we have. We have a routine. We're with many other people. And this monk was like, yeah, that's cute, but I love it here. Like, let's get back onto this new life, you know? And it definitely brings up when there's expectations or desires where someone's loving something and not everyone's on board. It's just a really interesting moment. I do think about that third monk and I kind of have an image where I'm like, I wonder what would have happened if he had asked for a boat. But you're mm-hmm. right. At the end of the day, he didn't want more supplies. He wanted his two friends with him.
Yeah.
Because that's what he needed to survive.
Yeah, we need each other. So I guess that's kind of what happened.
But are they really his friends after that is what I
know. They abandoned him. They abandoned him. That's true. I don't know. You know, I think it's a great story to reflect, you know, in the way we have, because there's so many important themes like need, conflict, relationship, belonging. And also I really love that reflection of the power of like going first versus going last and how, that exerts a sort of power, even if it's not intentional, right? Like even if, I mean, if the island spirit, of course, my first thought was genie, if the island spirit went to the first monk, you know, and the island spirit chose that person that wasn't of the volition of that monk, right? And yet that is what happened. So there's something almost like, I don't know, about fate that make, I think about that too.
That's true. I have to say this story definitely wants me, it makes me desire a sequel. I'm like, yeah. Buddhist elders, what happened after that moment? But yeah, thank you for kind of summarizing that. I will say, though, in the story, in the telling that I gave, I imagine that the first monk comes forward because they know what they want and they mm-hmm. have that clarity of knowing. But I also do appreciate the reading of it as fate and the island spirit choosing who gets the first one.
Yeah.
But I want to know, Nisha, after, you know, we've kind of broken down the story, what are your thoughts about it? What are your takeaways?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway is what you'd reflected on about the order of how we express ourselves and what power that has, whether it's intentional or not, and how we can maybe harness that to, I don't know, to support certain systems or create like a type of community or ecosystem. Like, how can I set the tone if I go first? How can I set the tone if I go last? And the other thing that I really took away that was super powerful that you said is that harm works. Like, that just like, I was like, oh yeah, that's so true. And I mean, when I say we say works, we're obviously not saying like that it's for good or whatever, but I do think that it is powerful, right? It is effective in that way for you to get what you want and to keep power in a certain way, maybe power like without love.
Right. We're not saying to cause harm.
Yeah.
We are acknowledging.
PSA.
Yeah.
Please don't cause harm.
Don't cancel us.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we are acknowledging that there's a reason these strategies survive and stay
yeah.
with us. And sometimes I think that's why self-reflection can be so important, because if we're not reflecting on our behaviors,
mm-hmm.
it's easy for us to just keep going. Like the same way that like maybe we have ideas about capitalism not being healthy, but we still go to the store and just buy things using money. We don't always think about that consciously, mm-hmm. right? But I love your takeaways. I love hearing really what you're meditating on. I think that this like something you said that I'm thinking about for this story in a new way, and what I'm taking away is thinking about how when the monks arrived, where they were all shipwreck survivors, I imagine there's a certain type of bond that they form together. Mm-hmm. And I can imagine the coziness. You're on this new island. Every day is new. You're relying on each other. There's a real bond that forms. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that moment where the two monks are pulled back to the island. They were with their community for a second. They thought they were free. And then they're pulled back into the situation with this third person who knowingly knew that they didn't want to be there, mm-hmm. but pulled them back into it. Yeah. That dynamic is really different. Mm-hmm. And the takeaway I didn't expect from this story is just that, like, we cannot go backwards.
Yeah.
We cannot recreate the past. The dynamic is going to be different. I also have to say that, like, I made the joke earlier that he's like a narcissist, abuser, manipulator. Mm-hmm. But I think there is something interesting here around, like, wow, like when people make choices, conscious choices to recreate dynamics with us, how do we hold that with love? When we find ourselves yanked back into the metaphorical island, mm-hmm. how do we choose to move forward, not just with that person, but also in that situation? And how can we do that without recreating harm? That's like my big kind of thought to chew on after this, because yeah. I don't know about you, but I've definitely found myself back on an island with someone and I'm like, okay, you love me. I'm flattered. And also, how do I honor that I don't want to be here, you yeah. know? And maybe I think like the thing I've been learning, which is so in tune with your work, is boundaries, mm-hmm. you know? And so this story, I didn't expect it. It seems to be a real reaffirmation of boundaries. And I'm kind of like, yeah, if I was one of those monks, I think I would start working on a boat and I would be like, thanks, dude. I love you too. And like, good luck, I'm out.
Yeah. It's really interesting because like, yeah, the first monk just wanted to, you know, have what he had before back, but you're right, you can't go back. And the two monks who return are going to have to create boundaries because of what just happened to them. Back to where they wanted to be, then back to the island where they didn't want to be. And now all of this has happened, knowing that this third monk knew that they didn't want to be there, like you said. So yeah, so much to chew on there. And yeah, definitely boundaries is a huge theme and I love it. Thanks so much for sharing all of that.
Absolutely. Thank you all for listening.
All right.
Till next time.
Bye.
Bye.
We really want to know what you think about Earthworm Slumber Party, so send us an email at earthwormslumberparty@gmail.com. You can also watch full episodes of this podcast on YouTube, so find us there.
We also have ways to work with us. Nisha is throwing free parties in Nisha Land. If you want to get down with Nisha, join her Notes from Nisha Land newsletter community to get the info.
And Opulence has a free gift for you, a beautiful and magical care plan creation guide that you can find on their Substack. And if you want to find us on Instagram, I'm at Healing Hype Girl and Opulence is at Opulence Abundance.
We have a serious ask for you all, okay? Listen up. If you love Earthworm Slumber Party, if this podcast has changed your life and you want to see the show continue and to continue to hear our stories, then we need your support. You can go to ko-fi.com/Earthworm Slumber Party. Again, that's ko-fi.com/Earthworm Slumber Party. You can go there, learn a little about the show, and make a one-time or recurring donation. This donation will actually unlock a special episode. Your support makes this show possible, and all of this info is in our show notes. Earthworm Slumber Party is hosted by Opulence Abundance and Nisha Modi, edited and scored by Adrian Garbar, and produced by Dahlia Gihon.